Mr. Bates, Real Six. We were talking about when you got back to Chatham Barracks, and just generally how, you know, as survivors, how you were treated.
The first very unpleasant part of it was as we went through the dockyard gates, Chief Petty Officer's son had been on Goodall. His name was Sparks, and he came across us to see whether his son, what happened to his son. And we'd seen him and we knew he was dead, so we had, this is what we had to tell him, which wasn't very pleasant. And he obviously was very, very upset. He was younger than me. It was his first trip.
The son?
The son, yeah. I got a bit bullshit at the time because we weren't treated very well when we first arrived at Chatham, so... Well, we were kept hanging around, and nothing seemed to be being done for us to get us into a uniform or get us a bath or food or anything. I know it was the end of the war, and obviously things got a bit slack, but nothing seemed to be to be urgent. So much so that I'd been given a Red Star by a Russian soldier, so I took HMS off and put the Red Star on my head.
It
didn't go down very well, I'm afraid.
Were you genuinely feeling communistic feeling, or was it just defiance?
Well, just defiance, I think.
Did they tell you to take it off?
Well, not so politely as that. Yes. And then, as I say, we were taken to the clothing store and given uniforms that were very, very slack, and either too big or too small. Anything that was left over, we got. And then we was sent to the office. And we were supposed to have, I think, 14 days survivors leave.
Did you get it?
Not quite, no. I was called back before then, for some unknown reason. I think that they must have wanted telegraphists for the push in the Far East, because a number of people that I knew and I met on my way out to the Far East were either recalled or just left one ship and, you know, was immediately drafted to another. In fact, when I went to sea...
Hang on, when you were on your survivor's leave, because of what happened to you later, did you have any problems?
No.
That you could put down, you know, we'll come on to what happened to you subsequently, but I mean, were you aware of any difficulties at the time with going out or...?
No, not really. No, I didn't. I would jump at a loud noise or something like that, but that was about all. Or a smell of diesel if a car or a lorry went past, give me little collie wobbles in the tummy. But that sort of thing, a reminder. And I had a very strange experience, but I won't tell you about that, involving seeing an apparition, which was, well, it wasn't frightening, but it was most unusual. I don't know whether you want to hear it, but I'll tell you if you
do. Yeah, tell, yeah.
Well, I went to bed a couple of days after I arrived home, and as I got into bed, and there was no lights in the streets because of the bombing, all the houses had been bombed opposite. And as I went to lay down, this terrific white light appeared in the corner of the room. It was a tremendously bright light, and it was shaped like a church door. And I thought it must be someone shining the car lamps or something like that. And I got out of bed and went nearer to it, but it wasn't. I looked out the window and it wasn't. Still, I wasn't particularly worried about it, just something strange. I got back into bed and pulled the clothes over my head. And as I did this, light came under the bedclothes. But it didn't illuminate the body, just itself. And I pulled the clothes down again, and it went back to the corner of the room and just disintegrated. About a day after that, the following day, my mother was out shopping and she saw Jackie Brown, the man I saw on Vindex, who'd been in Vindex. And he was drunk as a lord and didn't drink. He was a teetotaler. And when she asked him why he was so drunk and what had happened, was it the war that done it? He said he'd seen exactly the same thing. Exactly the same thing. He described it to me. Exactly the same as I'd seen it. About a day or so after that, I met a Jewish rabbi who was up in the place where the rabbis go. I can't remember the name. And he asked me whether I would come up, and he said it was an astral spirit that was trying to deliver a message to you, and he never completed his mission. Well, a strange thing, because I can vaguely remember, just before we was hit by the torpedo, somebody coming along the starboard deck with a signal pad. Now, this might be just pure coincidence, or it may not have been. It may have been a handkerchief, or may have been anything. I can't swear to that. But that's the little story. And the thing is, after that, my sisters didn't know, because Mum and Dad never told them. But they wouldn't sleep in that room afterwards. They wouldn't even go in. They said every time they did, it was so cold, they came out again. And then, till the day they married and moved away, none of them would go into that room.
So the next thing is, you got this post into the Far East. How did you feel about that?
Well, I went in and saw the surgeon commander, doctor. And he was a big, robust, big bearded, red faced man, and I said, "Well, I don't think it's very fair. I've had a couple of years or so in the Atlantic, and I've just been torpedoed in the Arctic." And he looked at me very jovial, laughing all over his face. "Go away, the sun'll do you good." So I finished up in the Far East.
Now, what ship were you? Did you go out on a ship, or were you going out to join a ship?
I went out in the Athlone. I think it was the Athlone Castle, but I'm not certain about that at all. Went out to a depot, first Mayino, I think it was called, and that was in Bashes in the jungle, and then I was transferred to the Derby Haven, which was a depot ship for ML's motor launches.
So you went to Trincomalee first?
First, yes, and then was transferred to I went on the Cavalier, I think it was, the Cavalier, and for on pass, but I was kept on there for about 5 weeks, I think, because they couldn't get me off into Singapore. I finally finished up in a camp in the jungle called Mayina. And from there I went to the depot ship, Derby Haven.
All one word, is that all?
No, two words.
Two words.
And
that was the ML motor?
Motor launches, yes. We did little runs up the coast and back. I think at the time there was a lot of unrest in the country. And a lot of smuggling going on and that sort of thing.
And what was your job on the ship? You were telegraphist, were you?
I was telegraphist, yes. We kept watch on the Derby Haven, but I think it was only daylight hours we kept watch, so we had plenty of time to mull around. And the times we went on the MLs, we were mostly back the same night or the following day at least.
Now, what would the trip on the motor launch be like?
A bit bumpy.
What would the crew be?
It was about five of us, I think. A couple of gunners, a whole lot of gunners. Skipper, myself, about five of us, I think.
And what would you do on a typical? Was it a patrol?
Well, we would call it patrol for want of a fancy word, but it was just like a trip round the lighthouse.
How far would you go?
I've no idea, to be honest. We would leave. They were fairly fast and would be steaming, I suppose, for 2 or 3 hours, and lay off, look at the beach and look at the jungle and see if anybody was knocking around or any junks that might be smuggling, board them and have a look, and then come back.
Did anything ever happen?
Nothing, nothing interesting. I think there's, I'm sure smuggling went on, but I think a lot of people closed a blind eye to it.
And what did you think of Singapore? You got that out there when? Would it be June or July?
Around about June, I think, June 45.
And what did you think of Singapore?
Well, I liked it. I mean, despite the fact that there'd been a war and everything else, it was clean and it was bright, and not like the Atlantic and the Arctic, which was dim and dull and sombre. This was, well, I mustn't use this word, gay sort of thing, and everything was bright and clean, and you know, your dobing got dry in no time. It was all nice, and you can bleach it in the sun and all the rest of it. I enjoyed Singapore.
And no contacts with the Japanese?
Yeah, I did some guards on renegade Japs. They were kept in a camp. We did some guards on those.
But, I mean, before the war ended?
Oh, no fighting.
No fighting. Anything else about your time out there? To do some boxing down there, I think you
know. Oh, yeah, of course.
Tell me about that.
There was two stadiums. One was Happy World, I think, the other one was the New World. Well, I mean, my pay was so small, little. I mean, like 8 shillings a week or something like that. You know, you had to clothe yourself and feed yourself on that, too. That's somebody I met called Wally Speed. He was an amateur boxer, and in fact, he was ABA champion. He asked me to spar with him, which we did, and we got very robust at times, though we were best of friends. So we decided, well, one night ashore, we both had no money, and we saw this boxing poster, so we decided to ask the manager whether we could have a go. I think it was about $4, that was about £1, you know, for 4 rounds. But it was better than nothing, so we signed on. Well, when on the first night we went there, he got beat. He was in before me. I went in second. It was just a ring of bamboo round where you could change. And while I was changing, this big guy come in with a buckled ear and a squashed nose. Goodness knows what. And I said, I'm glad I'm not in with you. You're about 2 stone heavier than me. But I did. I finished up in the ring with him. I lasted the 3.5 rounds. And then I decided I was taking the pasting for nothing, and I was going to get paid anyway, so I might as well lay down, which I did. I found out later his name was Abba B. Singh, and he was cruiserweight champion of Malaya, and I was a novice. So,
so you'd done well.
After being paid $4, there was a host of shipmates waiting for me outside to go and celebrate. So my $4, I think, paid for 1 round of drinks. I went back to the ship with a wonky nose and I'm feeling very sore.
Anything else about your time out there that you recall? How are you feeling? All right?
No, I kept... queer things were happening. Jumping was the main thing. I would be startled very quickly. And things weren't going fast enough. I wanted to speed them up. I had a couple of, I wouldn't call them flashbacks, but nasty dreams. I'd call them that. And I was very emotional about old shipmates too.
Was this getting worse?
Yeah, I think it was. Things would come to you. You'd go out, go ashore for a drink or a dance or something like that, and you'd come back and you would think, there you are in bright sunshine and everything's nice and clean, and you know, you had a good evening and everything like that, and your mates were laying up in the Kola Inlet, and you know, by all purposes, my action station hadn't been changed. I would have been with them.
And that feeling wasn't dying down. This would have been more normal. It was just getting worse.
Well, yeah, it was, because you know, I didn't make friends very easy. I don't know whether I thought it was disloyal or what, or that's a stupid thing to say. It was just that, you know, it wasn't the same. It wasn't good. It wasn't the same crew. It was foreign. It was, I had no right to be enjoying myself. That sort of vague, uneasy feeling.
Did you ask for help? I mean, did you contact the doctor or?
No, I didn't at all. Not even when I got a ringworm that was as big as a dinner plate on my chest. I didn't want to go near a doctor. I didn't. There was something. I just couldn't do it. And so this ringworm stayed with me until I came home.
And anything else about your time out in Singapore?
No, not really. I helped to cut a bloke down who tried to hang himself. Apart from that,
what happened there?
Well, we was up in Maina waiting for a draft jet to come home. And he found that he had a syphilis, or venereal disease anyway. He was married with a couple of kids, so he decided he was going to top himself. He had been gone about a quarter of an hour, half an hour or so, and decided to go and have a look for him. Not only me, a couple of others too. And he'd gone into the bathhouse, and he had a rope round his neck, and he was hanging from there. Fortunately, he survived. In fact, I've got a lighter somewhere that you gave me for lifting him up and cut him down. It was very unpleasant, I must say, lifting him up. Unfortunately, he messed himself. It wasn't very nice. But
you never felt that way inclined? Suicide?
No.
You know, so it wasn't that sort of depression or
no, it was just a morbid thing that I kept seeing Goodall on the bottom of the ocean, and I kept even hearing the bell ringing. In fact, you know, that sort of thing that I could imagine somebody said in my chair in the wireless office, and they were either burnt to cinders or they went down it. And these sort of thoughts. You know, what could I have done anything? Could I have gotten there? But I couldn't have done. I couldn't even get onto the funnel deck. There was, to say, ammunition, everything flying all over the place. And the door, anyway, was, as the wireless office had gone towards the stern of the ship, and they partly closed the door off. You couldn't even wriggle through, I don't think.
When did you come back from did you stay out on the Davy Haven? Did you get any other postings out there or?
No, I got APUK, which is waiting passage to UK.
And when was that?
It must have been Novemberish or something, 1946.
So you're out there a year?
Yes.
But quite a quiet time.
Yes, basically, yeah.
And what about your trip back?
Well, that was on Ellis. I joined LSD 304 and became part of the crew. I was supposed to be passenger, but for some unknown reason, I finished up part crew.
That's a landing ship tank?
Yes.
What was the trip back like?
Very, very stormy. In fact, we saw one of them, tornadoes a couple of times. We had mountainous seas. The engine had started to rattle. And if I remember rightly, somebody told me that all the engineer could do was get an English penny and drive it under the bearings to stop the rattling of the engine. And as you know, of course, they're just one big bag of air, LSTs, and we could watch the ripple coming from the bow right down to the bridge. We'd jump over the ripple as it came down. It was so bad. It was really a stormy passage back. Not as bad, I don't think, as the ones we saw in the Atlantic, but being a bag of air, she just bounced all over the place, you know. And it was on there that I first started to get the shakes.
Now, what happened then?
Well, I was sort of on edge and very, very much on edge. Went to drink a cup of tea and I found that I couldn't hold it. Just my hands had started to tremble and tremble, and I couldn't get it to my lips. The only way I could do it was to put two arms on the mess deck table and lift the cup up and take a drink that way.
Was there anything in particular you think had triggered it, or was it just the outcome of all this nervous stress?
Well, I can't think of anything, apart from the fact that the stress had been building up. Not stress, I suppose I was being morbid, thinking about my shipmates like that. But that was building up, and I was getting more. And being aboard ship again, the smell of the diesel and the heat coming from the engine and things like that would all fetch memories back. It's silly, I know, it is. Absolutely stupid, but you couldn't help it. Otherwise, I mean, when we got past...
How long did these attacks last, these early attacks?
Well, they could go on for a day. They could go on for longer than that until something happened that would take you out yourself. And you'd rally around for a while until something else happened to remind you, and then it would come back again.
Was anything done for you? Were you prescribed anything on the LST?
No, they carried sickbay Tiffy. That was all, and I didn't see him.
But your crewmates must have noticed.
Well, I think that I used to stand the joke with me that I was bomb happy. That was a standard phrase to save answering awkward questions. No, because there was. Some guys that hadn't been in that long and hadn't seen any action, been on shore stations, asking what it was like and what happened and all the rest of it. And he said, oh, I can't answer that, I'm bomb happy. And that way I avoided most of the questions. Oh, somebody asked me, I can't remember who it was or what happened, but I can vaguely remember somebody asking, When you were hit, did you scream? And I said no. And they said it would have been better if you had. Who asked me that? I can remember it being asked, but I can't remember who asked it.
So what happened when you got back to England? Back end of 46.
Yeah, we were sent on sent on leave. No, we weren't. We went straight into barracks, Chatham Barracks, and we were demobbed immediately. At least I went through the demob procedure.
Now, what was it? What was the demobilisation procedure?
It hurt me so much because I had no idea I was going to be demobbed then. Nobody had told us we were going to be demobbed. Then we walked into this office. At Chatham. We were given a paper. And a couple of sheets of paper with different questions on it. Then we was marched from there to see the MO. And from there we was marched into a big hall that had rows and racks of suits. And it was then that I realised that I was being demobbed. And until then, I hadn't realised. I tried to get back. I wanted to sign on. I wanted to carry on. But I think it was Lieutenant Commander that I saw. And he said no.
Why not?
Well, I think when I went in there, I was trembling. And I was so scared of leaving the Navy, to be quite honest. I wanted to stay in. And I asked, you know, the procedure for signing on. And I was told no. Well, I don't think I was given any excuses.
And what about the doctor? Have you told the doctor about the trembling, and or could he see?
No. I suppose he must have saw him, because it wasn't until I went home on leave that it was, and the thing that happened when I got home on leave, some of the crew, the relatives of the crew, knew I was back home, and they came back to see me, and that brought all good all back again. And even though it was a year afterwards, I don't know whether I told you that they when I went on survivor's leave, parents and girlfriends and daughters had come down and saw me at home, asked me if there was any chance that their loved ones were still alive. And the same thing happened when I came back from Singapore.
And so nothing was done about your developing problems then?
No. I think the first time I saw a doctor was when I went for a medical for a job with the Stepney Borough Council.
Now, was that what you first decided to do when you came out? What were you planning to do?
Well, I had no trade. I had no education as such. All I wanted to do was to get to work and get some cash behind me, because I had no substantial cash anyway, apart from, I think, the fiver that they gave me when I left the service, I think, and a couple of weeks' pay.
So what did you decide you were going to do?
Well, the first thing I did was, because I was always fond of wiring and things, I went to an electrical company. It was owned by my uncle, and he was contracting. My first job was in Barmouth, North Wales. And we worked for a lady, Crowther, rewiring her mansion. There's about 16 bedrooms, I think, in place. And I had a bit of an attack while I was there. We were sent up this mountainside to the mansion where she lived, and the lights failed, and I was completely in the dark. And I'm afraid to say that I panicked. I really did. I really panicked. We got the lights going, or my uncle did. He got the lights going after a while. But I was completely shattered by that. Because I didn't equate the two at the time, but I can see now that it probably was being locked in the caboose, and it was jet black, and I was in jet black again. I was disorientated. That's the only thing I can think of. But anyway, as I say, when I went for the business more or less folded when my uncle went up north, and somebody offered me or told me there was a job going with Stepney Council. So I went and saw the doctor. He commented that I should have gone for a pension. And I said I wasn't interested, that I would rather go to work and earn my own living, which I did. He gave me a start, so I started with him as a plumber's mate. And they was told, well, when I joined, there'd be a chance to take an exam and become an officer of the council. And at the first opportunity, I took it, and I passed.